Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, do you like the creative control of Vish Khanna show? Do you like it enough to like it on Facebook? Well, there's a Facebook page now. A guy named Mike in New Brunswick decided over the weekend to make a Facebook page for the podcast, so you should like it on there. Oh, and he also made a Twitter account for the show. I trust this guy. He's done stuff like this before. What could go wrong? The Twitter account for the Creative Control Podcast, at Vish Creative, V-I-S-H-K-R-E-A-T-I-V-E, at Vish Creative. So there you go. Facebook, Twitter, you can do it now. All right, let's get to the show.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hey, how you doing? On this week's show, David Yao and I have a nice long chat about his new solo record, Tonight You Look Like a Spider, and we get into some of his work with his past bands and what they might be up to. Some of them, like the Jesus Lizard and Scratch Acid, have reunited over the last few years and played more shows together. And we talked about that. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff. Jesus Lizard are featured in a new American Express commercial for a brief moment. We talked about that. We just had a nice conversation. I'm happy to share that with you. And before the end of the program, you'll hear a brand new song from David Yao's new record, Tonight You Look Like a Spider. And it's a creepy kind of record, but I think you're going to like it if you're a fan of David Yao's, and even if you're not. Anyway, that's what's coming up on the program. Stick around and listen to me and David Yao have a chat. Hey, this week's episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero. For my money, the best pizza you can eat in Guelph, Ontario. A proud, independent family business run by a punk rocker, Trocadero only uses a rich array of fresh ingredients cut by hand and homemade dough made daily, all baked to perfection inside of a stone oven. It's gourmet panzerotti, calzones, wings, salads, garlic bread, breadsticks, and oh man, the pizza. Personally, I like the gourmet Di Matteo with goat cheese, artichoke, roasted red pepper, mushrooms. I sub out the turkey breast for eggplant, but that's just me. I wash all that down with a Brio. Man, it's unbelievable. I'm getting hungry just talking about this. Call Pizza Trocadero at 519-829-2444. They deliver. Or you can visit them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph and online at trocadero.ca. That's T-R-O-K-A-D-E-R-O.ca. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. David Yao is a complicated man, but here are things I know about him. He used to live in Texas. He has sang in exhilarating, influential, and somewhat unsettling bands like Scratch Acid, The Jesus Lizard, and Qui, among others, where he's proven to be one of the most charismatic and confrontational frontmen in rock music. He's a graphic design and visual artist. He's an actor. He has been very kind and perhaps even sweet to me in interviews before. And he has a brand new, mostly instrumental and rather brilliant solo album called Tonight You Look Like a Spider, out now on Joyful Noise Records. I also know that he's on the phone with me now to talk about close to 58% of the things I just said. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. It's nice to speak with you again. You enjoyed my introduction, I could tell.
I did. The charismatic part was that brought a tear to my eye.
Is it weird hearing someone say you're charismatic? I think you are. When I see the Jesus Lizard or Scratch Ass or whoever I've seen, it's hard to take my eyes off of you. You and I'm not saying anything untoward. I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable, but you're kind of an eye-catching guy. I want to pay attention to what you're doing.
Well, that's nice to hear. And you mentioned the acting, and I've been doing a lot more of that. Recently, I've been downright busy with it. Charisma has come up a few times, and so I'm really grateful to that. I'm certainly not ashamed of it or boastful, but
But it makes
it,
you
it kind of cracks me up.
It makes you laugh. It makes you laugh a little bit.
Sure.
Well,
it's my false modesty.
Yeah, I think fans of your past work might be somewhat surprised by what you put together here on Tonight. You Look Like a Spider. Can you maybe discuss? What was your vision for this record, and how did it come to be?
Quite some time ago, I think in 1998, I owned a house outside of Chicago. At the time, I was married, and my wife and I lived there. And I'm really dear friends with Alexander Hacke, who plays bass or guitar, does all kinds of things with Einstürzen and Neubauten, and also different projects with his wife Danielle. But he had come to visit. I think he'd stay at the house for about 2 weeks, and in that time he showed me the very, very most simple, superficial part of how to work Pro Tools, and I really enjoyed it, and I was fucking around with that, and then about a week later, Dwayne Dennison, who was playing with Mike Patton in Tomahawk, was in town, and I met Mike. I'd never met him before. And he told me that he wanted me to make a solo record and that Ipecac was going to put it out. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, great. And so I had actually started messing around, making some songs already. They were the very first piece on the record, the opening suite, was the first thing that I'd made. And it's kind of orchestral and stuff. And about 8 or 9 years later, I finished doing it. And around that time, Ipecac was, because of the record climate and the music biz climate, Ipecac was no longer releasing new records by folks unless it was something Mike Patton had done or the Melvins had done, pretty much.
Right.
Which was perfectly understandable, and there were no hard feelings for that. And so I just kind of blew it off. I thought, well, fuck it, I don't need to put this thing out. And then just sort of as a whim, a friend of mine was doing a record. Adam Harding was doing a record with Joyful Noise. And I asked him if they'd be interested, and they said yes. And there you go. So.
Okay, so that's sort of the history of the project. Did you actually play all of the music on this record?
Yes. The only thing that anybody else did was there's a song on there called Senator Robinson's Speech. And one of my best, dearest, closest friends is this guy named J.R. Robinson. And he sent me an email once delineating very graphically and explicitly what he would do to me if he was a sort of a bestiality-loving homosexual. And it's really gross. I'm talking about, like, raping me with the corpse of a macaque monkey and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I just took that email and had the computer read it, and then I sort of fucked with the way she was reading it to make it sound like a really bored woman.
Oh, that's not... So, for some reason, I thought that was your voice. Not to suggest that you sound anything like a bored woman. I just thought... I thought that was you.
No, that's the computer talking.
Oh, okay. That's kind of cool.
The only time you hear my voice is there's some whispering, and then that's me doing the English accent at the beginning of the second song, the part about, from my vantage point.
Right.
That's
And that's your way of employing acting.
Well, acting like I'm English.
Yeah, yeah.
Oi, not yours. Start off.
Speaking of training, do you actually have any kind of musical training background? I don't know that I've come across this information in the past.
No, none at all. That's why the record is so weird, because I don't understand. I have no concept of music theory at all. Considering I did music for over 20 years, I really, really don't know anything about it. I don't know chords or anything like that. And so that's kind of why the record is kind of retarded in a lot of ways like that. It's sort of, I think it's a little bit analogous to the way children draw, you know?
It's got
ideas, but it's not very well focused, because I don't really know how to focus the stuff. So,
So your ability to play is just simply by taking up instruments and seeing what kind of noises you make with them?
Yeah, well, predominantly, most of the sounds on that record are MIDI. And with MIDI, you can, on the computer, you can physically pick up and relocate any note you want. You can make any note, you want, as long as you want it to be at whatever velocity it is, and, you know, but most of the MIDI sounds, certainly back then, sounded awful.
Yeah.
But the string, stuff like strings and timpani sound really good. And so that's why a lot of it is so sort of orchestral or soundtracky, because I can't play guitar, and MIDI guitar sounds terrible.
Huh.
But I really like the sound of the string stuff, so.
That's interesting to me. That's cool. It's interesting to me, because I feel like at some point in my life I read a quote from Steve Albini, who you worked with quite a bit in The Jesus Lizard, saying something about how you were among the most musical people he's ever encountered. Maybe I'm misquoting him, but does that ring a bell?
If Steve said that, I question where that's coming from.
Yeah, it could be something I made up. Maybe I daydreamed it or something. But I swear I remember, because you know at that point you were singing in the band, and so I don't know who asked him or where it came up, but something in my head tells me that this is a true fact, that he said something like this.
You know, I wouldn't deny that I have lots of ideas, and I had a lot of input in Scratch Ass and The Jesus Lizard and Quee and stuff, but as far as actually playing an instrument or writing music or reading music, I can't do any of that.
Okay. But you've more than managed to create really amazing music beyond that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. A lot of the pieces on the record seem like they could be scoring scenes in an off-kilter movie or something. Do you view this music as cinematic per se?
Not that much when I was doing it. Although I was, I'm kind of a fan of Angelo Badalamenti, and I was listening to a lot of his stuff. And I think you can hear some of that in there. There's the occasional thing like, oh, that sounds sort of Twin Peaks-y or something.
Uh-huh.
But I think at the time I wasn't really thinking of it as cinematic. But since I finished it, I'm well aware that it could work out in a whole bunch of different filmic scenarios.
Yeah. And some of the music, to me, is kind of scary. Are you scary, David?
Am I scared? I'm just ugly.
You've mentioned
I scare children. You know, I try to be nice to children, but they scream and run away.
No, come on, that's not true. You're not scaring children with your face, are you?
Maybe not. Well, it's funny, because I didn't really necessarily think of it as scary, and Joyful Noise was touting it as the terrifying new album by David Yao.
Yeah.
And they did that without sort of asking me. And I said, well, terrifying, really? What?
Well, I came to the same, I came to the same conclusion, and I hadn't even read that. I read it subsequently, but I listened to it, and I was like, it's a little, as you say, I mean, you mentioned sort of Twin Peaks-y. It creates a kind of surreal atmosphere, to say the least.
Well, thank you. I love that idea. I mean, you know, I like creepy stuff.
Yeah.
And at the time, at the time I was doing that, I mean, I've been a fan. I don't know a whole lot. I'm certainly no expert on classical music, but there's a pretty fair amount of it that I like. And I've always been a big fan of Edvard Grieg's Peer Gynt Suite. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a fair amount of Edvard Grieg in there, too.
Okay, okay.
And then one of the pieces, like the opening suite is divided up into five little tunes, and the fourth one of those five is actually a complete a Tchaikovsky ripoff.
Oh.
So I'll just come right out and say that.
So you're an avid classical music listener. I did not know that.
Well, I I'm no expert, but, you know, I like that stuff, Prokofiev. And as a matter of fact, the first part of that open suite is called No, comma, Proko, because I'd played it for a friend who is a musician, an English guy, and he said it reminded him of Prokofiev, which floored me. I was going, are you fucking out of your mind? I wrote something that makes you think of Prokofiev? And he said, where Prokofiev was playful, I was horror. And I went, fuck yeah.
So you embraced the horror and the terror, presumably. I mean, that appeals to you. Speaking of which,
yeah.
I've actually seen photos on Facebook which suggest that you might be in a horror movie. And I mean, I hope to God it's a movie. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, I just got back a week or so. Well, last week from finished shooting a horror movie in Atlanta, where I play. The movie is called The Circle, and I play a really, really evil, fucked up, perverted, rapist, murdering hillbilly redneck deputy. Me and my cronies have made our own sort of police force in the hills of this, wherever it is.
Uh-huh.
And we kill a bunch of people and get killed, and it's a horrible, gruesome mess, and I'm really, really excited. I had a blast shooting the movie.
So you have a fairly major role, it sounds like.
I'm kind of I don't have a whole, there was only like three pages of dialogue that I have, but I'm sort of the lead bad guy. I kill a few people and stuff like that.
Are there people in the film that we might know beyond you?
They're not what you would call famous. They're certainly not household words. The lead girl is this wonderful girl named Chelsea Crisp. Who she's done a fair amount of work, but I don't know how many people are really cognizant of her.
Okay.
There's some young, handsome, pretty people in it.
Okay. That sounds, so there's you, who you would self-describe as ugly, and then some young, handsome people.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. That's nice.
And a really cool-looking ghoul, this guy who plays a character named Kane, he looks so cool. We had not the main guy, but one of the guys who does the makeup for Walking Dead doing the makeup for us, and he burned off half my face for this movie, and it was pretty cool looking.
Is acting this character, by the way, I'm not sure that it's that much of a stretch for you. I'm not going to call you lazy. I assume you put a lot of work into it, but it seems like it could fit your, it's in your wheelhouse, right? I mean, this is a character that you can relate to.
Actually, no. I mean, I can. I've never raped or killed anyone.
Right.
But and I don't really like the idea of rape or murder. But I do like the idea of playing these characters. But in the last few years, I've been taking more and more acting classes and stuff like that. And now I'm getting freaked out how people want me to play, you know, these perverted things and like child molesters and stuff. And if you, depending on how you approach your acting, how seriously you take it and how much of a backstory you create, that could really sort of fuck you up. If you start like believing that this is the way that you should behave, for the duration of the film, it kind of screws with you. It really, if you try to understand the motivation of a child molester and think that, well, the reason that I put my penis in little boys and little girls is because I love them, it's like, what the fuck,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I can't see that being an easy transition to make at all. I mean, having seen you perform numerous times, when I heard you were getting into acting, it didn't seem like that far a leap. I was like, yeah, I mean, he's, as I mentioned earlier, you're a charismatic guy. You seem to enjoy performing. Acting is giving you a challenge that you probably have never encountered before in your sort of artistic life.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I did acting in high school, but that was about 75 years ago. So.
Okay, so you're kind of
before a television film.
Well, it sounds like you're enjoying it, so that's great.
Yeah, I just shot a teaser trailer day before yesterday. Are you familiar with the movie Airplane?
Yes, of course.
Of course, yeah. We shot for this TV show that they're trying to sell to a network called Legroom, and it's a comedy that takes place on an airplane, and we shot it on the airplane from Airplane.
Oh, wow.
And I was so dorked out. I was so excited. I was going, I can't fucking believe I'm on this airplane. You know, it's on a set and everything, but it's so cool to have been on that airplane where, you know, good luck. We're all counting on you, you know.
Yeah, no, that's great. So was this like a pilot you shot? No pun intended.
Yes, exactly. It's not a pilot as much as it's a what they call a presentation trailer or a teaser trailer, which they use to try and convince someone to buy it.
Oh, okay.
It's only like 12 minutes long or so.
So the trailer is for a show that doesn't quite exist yet, or how does that work?
It's a show. Yeah, right. It's a show that the writer-director wants to create.
Oh, wow. So they make the trailer before there's even... Wow, that seems complicated.
Yeah, and as, you know, as a means to so that instead of going to the network executive leader, you know, CEO jackasses, you can show them something as opposed to explaining it to them.
Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, I want to ask you about the record again, because you did some unusually unique artwork for Tonight You Look Like a Spider. And that, as I understand, you created these, like, concrete slabs, right? I watched the video. Is that, that's pretty much it in a nutshell, right?
Sort of, kind of, yeah. They came about when I was, after the Jesus was broke up, and I was doing photo retouching for a living, and I had done a couple print portfolios, and I always made really fancy boxes for them with dovetail joints and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then I made a DVD interactive portfolio, and I figured, you know, how can I make a cool package for this? And I had the idea of two pieces of cement that get screwed together with a bolt, and the DVD is encased on the inside of that. And so when it came time to do this record, I thought, well, maybe I can use that, just one half of it, and screw the record to the back of it.
Huh.
And so that's what I'm doing.
So you did like, and you
yeah,
made,
and I've.
What did you make, like 50 of them or something?
Well, no, I'm right now here in the kitchen. I've got three in front of me that I'm putting the felt on the bottoms of them. But I've made 19, and I have 31 to go.
Oh man, so it's a
that's a lot of work.
It's a fairly labor intensive thing. Well, that's kind of cool. I mean, I saw it. I got to tell you, I ordered the limited edition multicolored vinyl or whatever. I couldn't
uh-huh.
justify. Should I have ordered the concrete slab? I just don't even know where I'd put that thing.
On a shelf.
I know, but
it's
I got
not that big. It's 6 inches wide, inch and a half deep, and 9 inches tall.
Oh, okay. I probably could have. Damn it! It's all sold out, isn't it?
Yeah. Within 8 hours, it was sold out, which I thought was really cool.
Well, that's great. I mean, people, it's a cool idea. You know, actually, it seems to me that if you consider its music, its connection to, as I mentioned, film scores, which I know you didn't necessarily make that connection, but the artwork, this record, to me, it kind of seems to bridge all of your artistic worlds together in a pretty cool way. Do you see this as some kind of, I mean, it's hard for you to see it this way, but it appears to me to be like an almost like an all-encompassing statement from David Yao. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. That hadn't really occurred to me, but that makes sense to me. You know, like you can consider these things sculptures, and as they've been going along, I've been trying to sort of vary them up a lot. And that started by about a week or two ago. I had a really, I don't know where they were coming from, but there were a lot of flies in my house, and they were big, shiny green abdomen flies, you know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Those ones?
Okay.
But they were slow and stupid and easy to kill. And so I killed about 30 of them. And I've been sprinkling them down into the mold before I put the cement in. And so it looks really cool. Like, you know, you can see like 12 flies or something smashed in there with the cement.
Oh, wow.
And then I've also been putting hair and other dead insects and nails and rust and dirt. And so they all look similar, but different. I like that.
How liberating is it for you to do something like this in sort of instead of going a sort of standard mass production route? Exciting? How stimulating?
It is fun, and I've been really pleased. I really like every one of them.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of work. I mean, from start to finish, it takes a couple of days to make one, and I can be making several, you know, at the same time. But they have to completely set up and dry, and before you can, I put a couple of coats of shellac on them, mm-hmm. and then felt on the bottom and the back, and it is a lot of work. And recently, I've been so busy with just stuff that I kind of wish that I had all 50 of them done right now, because I just ain't got no. It's really cutting into my drinking time.
Right, of course, I can see that. How can't you do? First of all, can't you do both, or would that might not be a good thing? I guess.
I would forget stuff. I'd forget to put the bolt in, or I'd forget to add water to the cement or something.
So wait a minute. How long does it take you to make one? I don't know if you said that.
From the time that I pour the cement, it's probably, I can't really put it in the box until about 2 or 3 days later.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I can have several going at a time. Like if I pour one, I've only got one mold. If I pour one, then in about an hour, I can pour another one.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, during the course of a day, I can do six is the most I've done in one day.
Six. Wow. Okay. All right. That's cool. That's good. I, as I say, I wish I'd gotten one. That's cool. I'm happy for the people, the 50 people that got them. But at the same time, they got to wait. They got to wait for you to get done.
They'll all be out by the end of the month.
Okay. All right. Cool.
It's funny though, because I don't really expect, I mean, I like the record and I'm proud of it, but I really don't expect other people to. And I think it's particularly funny that, you know, 50 people spend $150 to get this this big brick with their record, and they're going to get it and hate it and go, well, at least I got this fucking $150 brick.
They're not going to hate the record. I tell you, they're not going to hate it. I'm sure, you know, there was a sample track before you had to order. So I'm sure if people heard that, they'd be like, oh, this is going to be different. This is going to be weird. And I think it's all right. I think people know what they're in for a little bit. At the same time, for those of you who haven't heard it yet, you don't know what you're in for. Let me say both things just to cover all our bases.
Yeah, well, I hope folks like it, but I can't expect them to.
Sure. You can't. That's true of anything, though. That's almost true of
exactly
of anything. Yeah. David, I was watching TV the other day, and I saw this American Express commercial starring Carrie Brownstein of Portlandia and Sleater Kinney. And at one point, I thought I heard the Jesus Lizard song Mistletoe playing for like 3 seconds. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember chiming in with the rest of the band like we always. We get these emails from our lawyer and stuff saying, hey, these people want to use the song for whatever. I honestly don't remember saying yes or no or I don't like it or I love it to American Express, but I must have.
Okay.
I must have okayed it because it has to go through all four of us. Or, you know, it could be that they all said yeah and I said no. We're pretty democratic that way. I honestly don't remember.
So you've been approached by sort of commercial entities before or whatever, advertising agencies, and for the most part, have you said no yourself?
Well, no, usually it more than advertising companies. It's been more like for TV shows and the occasional movie and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't really have a problem with. Honestly, I'm a little embarrassed that we have a song on a American Express commercial, but I'm not going to let it bother me.
Okay. There are people mostly on the electrical audio forum who have suggested that hearing your music in a credit card commercial is disappointing. It sounds like it is for you as well.
Well, say it be, you know.
Yeah.
People have such, particularly on electrical audio, folks, they have really strong opinions, and they oftentimes they know not what they speak about.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, you feel like this was just a decision the band made. It's kind of, have you seen the commercial yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it's just like 3 seconds. She's in a record store, and initially, I wasn't even sure it was your song. It seemed like it had been treated, but I'm like, no, that's clearly Mistletoe. So I maybe you should check it out at some point and see for yourself.
I do think it's funny that they would choose that song. I mean, God, I don't even like that song. It's hard to listen to. It's funny they would pick that one.
Why don't you like that song?
It never appealed to me very much.
Huh. Okay. By the way, your voice is not included in the, it's just like an instrumental fragment.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. You yourself are kind of not involved.
Yeah. See?
The Jesus Lizard, speaking of the Jesus Lizard, you guys are playing an All Tomorrow's Party show in Australia this October, I understand. How did that come about?
Well, you know, we did that reenactment tour a few years ago, I think in 2009 or whenever that was. And that was all spurred on by Barry, who runs All Tomorrow's Parties. And when we were doing that, you know, playing the U.S. and Europe, I wanted to go to Australia and Japan because I always loved going down there. And our booking agent said that there wasn't enough interest.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't do it. And then I guess somehow Barry and his partner, Sean, I'm assuming, were able to conjure up enough interest down there that we could do that. And we're playing a show with I think the Breeders are on that, and I think the Scientists, and I don't know who all.
Yeah, I believe
And then we're doing
I believe it was curated by the Breeders, which suggests that they may have asked you to play somehow.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. That's my understanding. I could be wrong, but that's my understanding.
That'd be great. That'd be flattering.
Yeah.
And then I think also around that time, I think that we're doing some shows in New Zealand. hopefully Japan, and then there's talk of possibly going to do some things in South America, which would really spin my prop. I've never been to South America, and I'd love to go to like Chile and Brazil and stuff.
Oh, wow. So in a sense, because I think you and I have spoken a few times, so I can't keep track of this, but I believe the last time we spoke, it may have been after the Jesus Lizard reenactment tour. It must have been for the Scratch Acid sort of tour that you did again. Anyway, at that point, you'd suggested, yeah, I don't know that I want to do the Jesus Lizard again. I think this will be it. But it sounds like if things come, you know, if the right requests come through, you guys are contemplating them.
Yeah. Well, even when the idea first came around, I wasn't very excited about the idea. I thought, you know, come on, we broke up a long time ago. We're not a band. We don't have anything new to offer.
Yeah.
I didn't really see the point in it. But the other three guys really wanted to, and, you know, it's not my place to nick something if all three of them want to do it. And then, so I said, yeah, and we ended up doing it. And it was so much fun, I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And it was great to hang out with them again. So it was really a much, much better time than I expected. And not to mention, I made more money that year than I'd ever made in my life. And which is, you know, that's a pretty cool bonus, really.
Yeah, what do you make of that? I mean, so bands like yours are of a certain, I guess, vintage, if for lack of a better term. You know, you're from an era maybe 20 years ago, maybe less, and there seems to be a lot of that going around, this sort of renewed interest. Not even renewed. It's, as you say, it's higher. You're higher profile than maybe you were at the time that you were a going unit. You know, you're actually pulling in more people and more money. What is going on? Why do you think that's happening?
I don't really know what to attribute that to. I'm assuming that it's the internet and the speed with which communication has sort of moves. Like, for instance, the first ATP that I was aware of was when Slint played in Camber Sands in England, and I'm pretty good buddies with those guys, so I went over there for that show and saw that. I mean, they played in Louisville before that, but that was sort of their first real show. And when they were in a band, when they were a band in whatever, 88, 89, or 90, I don't think they ever played to more than, you know, 75 or 100 people. And now, and well then, whenever that was, 2006 or 5 or whatever, they're so huge and like this outrageously influential.
Yeah,
and I can only assume that it's the internet.
I sort of attribute this to the internet as well. I feel like for some reason, people, maybe they're like me, maybe they're younger. They're bringing bands back to life, and it's kind of frightening. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're resurrecting bands just by sheer will, and it's kind of cool, but it's also kind of scary.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a, yeah, I don't think about it that much.
Yeah.
So I haven't, I don't really know exactly what to say about it, but, I don't know. It's weird for me. Like, I do enjoy doing those shows that we did with the Jesus Lizard and Scratch Acid, but it's weird to me, like, old guys doing stuff that they, like, particularly Scratch Acid. Jesus Christ, we wrote those songs, some of them like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, a blind person probably would think we're better.
Yeah, no, honestly, I got to say, you know, having seen the Jesus Lizard many times back in the day, seeing you in 2009, I don't want to say you were better, but you were definitely, you know what? You might have been better. It was weird. And I don't know if that says something about my perspective as well, right? And your perspective has changed. You know, we're all different. So, but man, it was ferocious and you seemed hungry. Like, you seemed like, yeah, because the last couple of shows you guys would have played in Toronto, there wasn't the same energy, not from the band necessarily. Of course, we're forgetting one thing here, Mac McNeely. The last few times,
exactly. Once Mac was gone, it was just his fucking job.
Right, and then I don't know that necessarily came across from a performance standpoint, But I think, you know, the crowds were kind of a bit, it was a bit fewer people were showing up, and I didn't know what was going on. And then the band stopped, and then you came back and Mac was back, and it was like the real band, and it was crazy. It was crazy how into it everyone was.
Yeah, and it was a blast to hang out with those guys. I haven't seen Mac. I hadn't seen or talked to Mac in 12 years.
Before the reunion or reenactment, as you call it.
Exactly, yeah. Before we went to practice, we kind of all convened in Nashville and practiced there.
But don't you love him? Aren't you kind of...
with all my heart and soul.
You love him. So that must have been hard to not see him for that long.
It was terrible. I mean, he had some sort of demons and issues and stuff that he had to deal with. And in doing so, he cut out a lot of people from his life.
Yeah.
And that was really hard to deal with. And, eventually I just sort of, well, okay, he's not going to talk to me. And so that's that. But then when we started communicating about doing this reunion, and I think this is in the press as well, where Mac and I were talking on the phone, and I said, you know, when I see you, I'm just going to cry like a baby. But instead, we first saw each other in Dwayne Dennison's front yard, and we just giggled. We hugged and giggled. It was great.
That's great to hear. No, that's awesome. That's so nice to hear. Yeah. I've actually heard that some members of the Jesus Lizard are eager to write new music again. Are you one of these members?
Write new music for the Jesus Lizard?
Yes, that's right.
No.
Why is that? Why don't you want to write new songs together? You've had so much fun playing together again. Why not write again?
I don't have any musical desire right now at all. I mean, even the solo record, you know, I finished it 6 years ago, and I'm not interested. I don't have any drive for creating music.
None. That seems so shocking to me. We've just talked about how much fun you had making the concrete bricks for the record, and this record is...
Well, that is fun, but that's not making music. And,
right.
You know, doing the reenactment shows is kind of, you know, we're not creating anything. It's just, you know, it's reenactment. It's fun hanging out with the guys and, you know, drinking some beers, although they don't drink nearly as much as they should. I think the occasional musical projects will come up. I did a few songs with Quee at the end of 2012, and stuff like that will happen every now and then, but I definitely don't want to do music like full or even really part-time. I'm much more interested now in acting.
Yeah, no, and you've mentioned that before, and I totally appreciate that. It just seems like the Jesus Lizard do have some plans coming up, and I know that some members have sort of said, like, it would be nice and a bit less boring to try to play some brand new songs, but that's just not your that's just not part of your interest right now.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that.
I don't want to get in the middle of a band discussion. I've read this and I'm
did
just
you curious. You know, do you know the publishing company Akashic that is run by Johnny Temple from Girls Against Boys?
That's right. You've got a big Jesus Lizard book that was supposed to come out this year. What's going on with that thing?
It's still coming out. I think it's going to come out around the time that we do those reenactment shows in October. So it should be out, I think, at the end of October, beginning of November kind of thing. And it's really good.
It's a photo book. It's like a coffee table book or something?
Yeah, with a whole bunch of pictures, stuff written by all four of us, and written contributions from a plethora of people, ranging from, you know, Mike Watt and Alex Hackett to Guy from Fugazi, and just all kinds of folks.
Yeah, I was very interested in that book coming out when I thought it was, and then I think it got pushed back or something.
Yeah, there were a whole lot of delays. It's very difficult to do a project like that where all four of us are busy with other stuff, and you know, there's things that need to be approved and changed, and so it took a whole lot longer than anybody anticipated. But now there were just emails floating around a couple of days ago about the very, very final aspects of it.
Oh, cool. And it's a great publishing house as well. So I'm hoping to pick up a copy of that. Everyone should pick up a copy. David, we've covered your new solo album. We've covered some of your acting and roles. Is there anything else we need to talk about? Are you satisfied?
Okay. There's one other thing.
Oh, go ahead.
If you go to davidyao.net, that's my sort of drawing and painting website, and I just recently put some cat pun drawings up there. And Akashic is also going to do a book of my cat puns.
Cat puns?
I'm really excited about.
Can you give us, I know you mentioned them as drawings, is there some way you can give us some kind of flavor for what some of these cat puns?
Yeah, it's like the criteria for the drawings is pretty much anywhere C-A-T shows up in the English language, it's an illustration of that, like, you know, catatonic is the picture of a drunk cat with a tonic in front of it. Or category is a picture of a cat sitting on a railroad track and his guts are spilling out. Catamaran is like a cat in the water with two sort of boat-like things under him. And catnip is a picture of a cat with an exploded view of his nipple and stuff like that.
All right, that sounds awesome. When's that coming out?
There's going to be somewhere around 80 of them, and I have to have those finished by the end of September.
Okay.
So I don't know when the book will be out, but you know, I think books take longer than records, so
they can.
I don't know if it'll be this year or not.
You're a very busy man, David. I can't thank you enough for making so much time for me today.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.
I want to let people know that the new David Yao LP is called Tonight You Look Like a Spider. You can learn more about how to hear and purchase it at joyfulnoiserecordings.com. And David, thanks for the talk. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you, Vish.
Yeah, no problem. Oh, David, if I wanted to play a song from your new record right now, what would you suggest?
Roundhouse.
Why does Roundhouse come to mind?
It's relatively accessible, and it's got sort of steel drums in it for those fans of world music. It's kind of my Talking Heads meets Paul Simon kind of thing.
Okay, David, it's great. I always like talking to you, and I thank you for all your time today.
Sure thing. We'll take care, and until next time.
From my vantage point, the top of the hill, I was able.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.